the president of the United States would have made it an election issue, I probably would have laughed and said there's no way. Whether it's a meme coin or Bitcoin, they treat all of them the same, basically like gambling instruments.
Another episode of Lab Talks. I'm Ben Putley, the CEO and co-founder of Alchemy, and it's my pleasure today to be joined by Nick Carey, founder of blockchain.com. Please, if you'd like to give our audience a bit of an intro to who you are, what you do, we can get started.
Thank you. Well, it's great to be with you today, and I know we've had a bunch of good conversations in the past, and I'm looking forward to continuing those. So a brief history. I'm one of the founders of blockchain.com. We started blockchain.com in the UK, in Northern England, in New York, over a decade ago. I kind of think of our birthday, the day we registered the website, which was October 15th, 2011. And so for me, that's sort of like our birthday in a lot of ways. And back then, no one was really paying attention to crypto or Bitcoin yet. The first thing we did was really build a website called blockchain.info, which is sort of the predecessor project to the company. And that became very popular. It was a way of looking at what was happening on the blockchain and kind of created some of the first information architecture and first graphics that sort of looked at everything from transaction history to address distribution to how much hashing power was coming online, all as sort of evidence for adoption early on of Bitcoin. And we took that and got sort of excited about making it easier for more people to use Bitcoin. And then we went down the path of building more and more software. And so I've been doing that for well over a decade. I am really passionate about financial access for everybody in the world. I think there's still a lot of unfulfilled promise in our industry. And we've made a lot of progress over the previous decade. Just yesterday, I was at an event that was pretty cool where UNICEF was talking about integrating with digital currency projects and delivering end of road, end of mile services to international aid organizations and more using digital currencies and digital assets. And for me, this is a real sort of endorsement of the potential for these technologies to really reach the frontier of all Earth and hopefully bring some of that promise of better, cheaper, faster to everybody. And I think we've just come an awful long way in the last decade, but it's been an absolute journey. And yeah, a lot of our story takes place here in the UK.
Nice. Did you think we'd get to where we are today as far as like the adoption is concerned? I still think there's a lot to be said for more adoption, but like there's certainly a lot more in the last 12 to 18 months than I certainly anticipated.
Yeah. So the way I think about that, if you had asked me like 5 years ago, if I thought by 2025, you know, crypto would have a $3 trillion market cap, that the president of the United States would have made it an election issue, that there would be global regulatory, you know, progress, I probably would have laughed and said, there's no way. And so there has been very significant, I would say, movement and adoption and maturity in the market. But I reserve a little bit of my excitement about that, because if you look on chain, which to me is really the most important way of assessing adoption, which is to say, you know, the number of people that are online using decentralized systems where they are the custodians of their value and are not relying on intermediaries or centralized services, because that's really sort of the main promise of these tools is that they don't get captured, you know, the same way that Web 2.0 companies captured all of our personal attention for social media sites, or how banks captured all of our wealth and sought rent-seeking behavior on top of it. And so if you look at the numbers of people on chain, we're probably more in the like 200 to 300 million users globally. And so, you know, considering there's 8 billion people in the world, we honestly have a long way to go still. And so, you know, I reserve our, we're definitely not at the stage where we're running victory laps in my view at all. And I honestly, I think this will take a lifetime's worth of work. It's a huge foundational change. The first 10 years have built a massive amount of the necessary infrastructure, which is to say wallets and exchanges and mining operations and now asset managers and decentralized infrastructure to support trading and much more. And that's sort of necessary as like the base of the adoption pyramid. And then you get basically all the layers on top of it and more markets, more use cases, et cetera. And it's got to still get easier to use. And so while 10 years ago, we were, you know, still training people how to use QR codes, it took a global pandemic for that funny little box with all the squares in it to become kind of commonly used by everybody. And so, you know, people don't remember this, but, you know, really digital currencies and Bitcoin were the first ones to sort of try and use QR codes in app. And it was very confusing for people. And so it's a long way of saying that I think the track record is, you know, it's been good. And there are millions of people that are now using digital currencies on a daily basis in their everyday lives. But we're not at the billions level yet. And even if you have an optimistic appraisal of current adoption trends, I think we're, you know, at least a decade away before we have, you know, 30 to 40% of the world plugged in and online and on chain.
Yeah, I think you're right. Do you think there's obviously been some big landmark releases? You've had like very successful ETFs launch, which I think probably have definitely helped awareness. I think to your point, perhaps not adoption in kind of the truest sense of blockchain adoption. Do you think anything over the last 12 to 18 months has hurt adoption? Do you think it's set anything back? Like, is there anything that's worked against the potential adoption of blockchain?
This is tricky because I think some of the large global regulatory regimes like MiCA or attempts in other markets have approached bringing obligations to the industry that are supposed to support consumer protection while also legitimizing and you know, basically making these things supposedly more accessible to the market. But it is very difficult to actually strike that balance. I'll give you maybe an example. In the UK, a year and a half ago, a very strict rule set was basically imposed on all crypto companies offering basic brokerage services, meaning buying and selling digital currencies. And they treat all of them, whether it's a meme coin or Bitcoin, the same. And they treat them basically like gambling instruments, which I honestly don't think is fair. There's a spectrum of these digital currencies. Yeah. There are very funny meme coins, which have no intrinsic value and are intentionally set up as like literally the equivalent of an internet joke. And then there's hard assets that have gone through the approval process of the strictest financial institutions in the world, like a BlackRock. And that digital asset, which is Bitcoin, is treated the same as a meme coin, which is to say they are then required basically for retail adopters. If they want to buy one of these things, they have to go through a financial literacy quiz. They have to go through all of these barriers before they can purchase. And there's even a holding period of 24 hours after they've input a debit or credit card or bank transfer to purchase. And so by doing so, it actually made it so cumbersome that the conversion rates, meaning the number of people that actually went through the whole process, declined significantly. And what that means is the revenues of the companies offering these services also declined correspondingly. And so while the market actually went up three times over the last 18 months, the number of people in the UK specifically that had exposure to this asset class that was growing decreased quite a bit. So while the intention was to provide some consumer protections, because perhaps from a certain point of view, consumers don't understand the difference between a Dogecoin and a meme coin and you know, a decentralized research coin in Ethereum, and insert all of the other digital assets, of which there are now tens of thousands. And I think that's a reasonable perspective to have. But by punishing sort of the collection of them, you have essentially harmed the consumer by not offering them access and choice in a timely way. And so one of the things our industry has been clamoring for is clear guidelines from regulators, but they should be fair. And they also should allow us to compete on an even playing field. And if you talk to a lot of startups across Europe and in the UK specifically, over the last decade, it's been very difficult for them to actually acquire their own bank accounts just to do things like pay their employees and do basic business transactions. And so because of that, many of the largest digital currency companies were basically born offshore. And when that happens, you lose a lot of the sort of benefits and the ecology of building startups and technology companies in your own jurisdiction. And so, it's a bit of a nuanced position, hopefully. But I do think there has been, you know, in terms of the big moments, clearly the ETFs were a very popular product. The Bitcoin ETF, specifically the BlackRock one, is one of their most successful ETF products ever. It surpassed the AUM of their gold ETF in like 90 days. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is opening market access to a whole new generation of asset allocators, which is to say mostly our parents' generation and even older, who have watched this industry, I think, with curiosity and probably some trepidation over the previous decade. But they also have watched the value of their dollars, pounds, and euros deteriorate due to inflation. Yeah. They've seen the trends of tech and how those are bringing wide scale, adoption of all kinds of tools and features that are very valuable to society. And so I'm quite encouraged by these things. And I think in the long run, you'll have a spectrum of access to digital currencies. You can go buy some through a wallet. You can buy some through your brokerage account. You can buy that, in a lot of different formats, and that's good. And it increases market access. So I think those were definitely a pivotal moment and hugely legitimizing. We were all competing with each other in the digital currency space, but ultimately with these big regulatory packages I'd say clarity from our governments, we're actually going to see the big financial institutions start to compete with the startups, and we'll have a completely different conversation again, which is like, well, how do we make sure that there's still market access and smaller companies can compete on even playing field? And we'll have all those conversations all over again.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting few years, and I can certainly relate to some of the issues that you've raised there as a startup in the UK. It's been challenging, but interesting nonetheless. I think also,
What would have been easier for you guys? Like, if you could have had like one or two things change to help improve the opportunity set for Alchemy, what would it be?
I think just broadly a bit more support. You know, there was a lot of the like dealing with the FCA and their sandbox was particularly slow, and then just like understanding how to structure a business. Like, this was in 2020, and I think it was just like a passing comment from someone that was potentially investing when we launched. I was like, have you thought about doing this? I was like, I have not thought about doing that, which then led us to taking on legal advice that was expensive. It was a cost that we hadn't really like budgeted for at like the level at which we needed it. And I think that just made it more difficult than we anticipated in getting to where we are today. We ended up bringing the legal counsel that we had from Gately in-house, because even though it's expensive to do that, it's much more cost effective than like the constant backwards and forwards that we had with lawyers. So that in particular, just like understanding how to navigate it. And even Mark does a brilliant job, but we were looking at HMRC's website to get some advice on like how we handle taxation. And for one part in particular, one of the crypto memos, there was like 27 words to describe a certain type of transaction. And he's very much used to like tomes and 20,000 pages worth of tax advice. So you like know the rules to then go from that to, here's literally a sentence on how this particular asset, when it goes from here to here, like you bridge from one chain to another, this is what you do. And there's one sentence which made him feel very uncomfortable. So like, I think your point exactly right. It's like, it would be great, and I think regulators struggle to do this, but like this market moves so quickly, it pivots so quickly, like the pace is relentless. If there was just like increased it by 20% just to kind of match where the market is going, just to help people like Alchemy, other companies in the UK, like get a bit more support from the government that is actually going to help us grow. Because they're, I know you focus heavily on like the fintech side of things. I think us as advertising, that basically is just handling a ton of transactions with value the whole time. Like there is kind of a bit of crossover there. It's like, and the UK is a brilliant market for advertising. You know, like a lot of large brands and planning takes place in the UK across Europe. So like we're positioned really nicely for this sector. And I think if you implement blockchain into how payments are handled to the various different parties that are involved in buying ads online and anywhere really, it would allow us to grow what is a big sector for the UK at large. So yeah, it's I think just like more support more quickly would have been brilliant, and like a more progressive attitude towards it. You know, like you, we were out in Dubai for Token 2049, and that is a country that has like openly welcomed blockchain and is like really trying to set the pace there as far as the regulations concerned.
Right. Has come here, building you, get approved, you can set up a bank account and you can build. And then I think if it's like a little bit, we don't have that yet here in the UK. It's like they want to be a leader in AI and want to be a leader in fintech, and they want to be a leader in digital assets, which I think the tone is right. That's great to say those things, but then they need to be met with some inviting actions that basically encourage the next generation of entrepreneurs and also the other established companies to come here, plant a big flag in the UK and start bringing and raining capital down. And I think it could be a very great strategy for the government to basically do that. And there's even maybe an argument to take a look at it from the tax perspective exclusively. Yeah. And because this is a complicated area of law, but if you wanted to kind of open an amnesty, you know, over a, I don't know, a 2 to 5 year window, say, hey, bring your business here. We're going to provide clarity within 5 years, but you get 5 years to basically build and grow. I think there would be billions and billions of dollars that would teleport into the UK economy overnight. This is a great place to build companies. The rule of law here is great. There's a long history of investors and cooperation with regulators and a big market. Like, and it should be out competing jurisdictions like Dubai for this talent and for this capital. And so, I think there's an important moment to reinvite those folks here, but it does require, I think, like you said, not just a progressive mindset, but just thinking about the future and what things you need to have in your economy to do it, and then inviting it over. Like these, you know, you could build incredible companies here.
Certainly, yeah. Like we have some of the greatest universities in the world, but one of the kind of smallest number of startups, and I think that just on a kind of business standpoint, there's not the support for entrepreneurs. And I mean, really, the only thing that's happened for us in the last 4 years is national insurance went up, which like makes my job harder. You know, I've got to find more money to pay the government more money to ideally like create more jobs. You know, like there's 30 people here in the UK. Those jobs didn't exist 4 years ago. It's like not like setting the world on fire, but it's still nonetheless 30 more jobs that didn't exist. Over the last 4 years, and that's just actually cost us more money,
which it's more overhead. And this is a global labor market now, like
exactly right. So it's interesting, but I think we're quite excited about at least the adoption we've seen from people that are buying media through our exchange. So like clearly there is an appetite for a solution that makes a lot of sense. I also think that blockchains are a very, very symbiotic to AI and automation and agents in a way that banks aren't necessarily. You know, like the composability of a smart contract on whatever chain it is can be interacted with an agent in a way that makes some very, very compelling use cases for moving value around to different people in the marketplace. So that's one thing that we're spending quite a lot of time on, is like, how does that look? What makes sense there? And I think that certainly the proliferation of stable coins is, like, I think, like outside of Bitcoin, is like probably the best product market fit that we've seen. And I just think that in terms of the fees that you can save and remittance is going to be very, very interesting. Plus then the customization, the composability of how the back and middle office of a company can be automated and like kept quite light and lean would really allow you to spend more time and investment on the business units that are generating more value, as opposed to like the back and middle office that doesn't necessarily. So that's, again, one thing we're spending a lot of time on.
Yeah, and I think AI is going to play a huge role in that. Like, obviously, the ability to bring, you know, vast efficiency to these previously sort of tedious handoffs of cases, you know, or reviews or approvals, the kind of thing where we usually have people checking each other's work, can now be done in a much more digital and hands-off way. I'm quite encouraged by those things too. I mean, you're going to get, you know, basically hyper-efficient organizations that are highly valuable, and that will bring, you know, great wealth and build incredible companies. So I think you're right about
Certainly,
that.
Certainly, yeah. So I think there's a lot of, we're going a little bit off topic here, but there's a lot of like incredible stories about the revenue per head for some of these new businesses that are being created, like Windsurf just got acquired, and Curse is making a ton of money, and Lovable and Make.com, you know, these businesses that are self-serve, that is predominantly around coding. And I think that that makes sense for them for a while, until you get to a point where you're big and you do have a big back office and a middle office. I think perhaps what is being looked at less is like actually the back office and middle office, how you automate those things. And I think blockchains are great for a immutable record of exactly what's going on in your business, that can be interacted with in AI without the requirement to have to wait for a bank to sign for payment. And still a human being is then inserted into that point, has to call the bank to allow payments to be released. You know, it's still like archaic to some degree. And I think that stablecoins, plus agents will be a very, very interesting space over the next 2 or 3 years.
Totally agree.
Else have you got your eye on? Sorry, go ahead, Nick. Okay.
Yeah, no, I on that exact topic, I've got my eye on that. I think, and a prediction I'm starting to make, and I'm not the only one, is that I think within 5 years, the majority of digital asset payments will be conducted by essentially agentic services, which is just to say software that is basically doing things on behalf of a company or an individual. You know, these AI systems will easily be able to set up a digital currency wallet, acquire some stable coins, and then perform valuable services or activity on behalf of a household or a business. And because digital payments are natively efficient and faster, this stuff will basically proliferate very, very quickly. And so I'm excited about that. I think it'll, you know, we'll have other problems with these, with this, this level of adoption, where basically, like, instead of humans being on chain, it'll be machines and computer systems on chain, paying for everything from electricity to bandwidth to server space to ad space. I can imagine giving myself, example, after this podcast, I could say to my AI, love my conversation. Here's a 50-pound budget. I want you to promote our podcast on the 5 most social media, you know, popular social media channels, and give me the results after, you know, 5 hours. And if it's going well in one, you know, I'll authorize more money at that point. And so then a computer system goes out, generates a bunch of ad content, sends it out, promotes it, you know, basically. And that's like a weird, silly example, but like just that writ large across all organizations, I think are going to be really cool. So you're going to see a lot of, like almost a new UI, UX, which is to say a new interface for commanding and controlling what used to be apps, integrating with AI, and then performing economic activity. And this will be a step function change. The last time I would argue we saw something of this magnitude was really switching from the tactile keyboard to the touchscreen, from you know, sort of a BlackBerry to an iPhone. And this will be a completely different experience, which is to say you'll be able to, at a very high throughput, communicate with software that you rely on today that you have to put in the digits through your keyboard or through your phone on, but in a much faster way. And that's all going to happen over the next few years. So it's going to be a big change, but young people already get this. I don't think we'll be using keyboards within 5 years. Like, that's done. And just like we don't handwrite anymore, I think all that's going away.
It's the keyboard stuck around for a while, isn't it? You know, like
it really has.
No one's cracked a better way to interact with computers, laptops, or phones. And I think that is the next thing, is like, what does the new piece of hardware look like that facilitates everything that we're now doing online? And I wish I knew, but I'll be interested to see what it ends up being.
I think it'll be audio visual, just like you and I can convey 1,000 times more, both like tactical and emotional intelligence via a personal conversation with gestures and voice and intonation and speed. If I was trying to type all this out, how I was feeling, what I was trying to convey, the enthusiasm of it, the emotions of it, it would take pages and pages and dozens of minutes. But in a quick conversation like this, you know, you can really, you know, your level of understanding is much higher. And I think that'll be like, we finally have the input systems from the computers to basically do that. So it's going to be, and it'll be ubiquitous. It's not like it's going to be owned by, you know, one company. I think that'll be a big change too. Like no one owns the keyboard, right? I mean, it was invented, I think, by a typewriter company, but the input won't be like controlled like an operating system, which was the sort of way of the past. This will be very different than that.
Yeah, I think you're right in a way that I guess like no one really owns a ledger necessarily. Do you know what I mean? That I think that's where the blockchain was ahead of its time in some degree. And I think it's been waiting for something like AI to actually realize it, the potential of what is possible with it, because they're the perfect partners, in my opinion. And you don't hear, I think this is where people that are in blockchain have a little bit of an advantage, is that you don't hear a huge amount of people in AI automation talking about blockchains, but you do hear a lot of people in blockchain talking about AI. And maybe there is something in that, or it's just everyone's talking about AI. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. All right, Nick. Well, I think we've covered quite a lot there. I appreciate you taking the time to join me today. I know you said you've got a busy day of traveling, so I will let you get on, make sure you remember your passport. But yeah, thank you very much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting.
Great. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, I think the summary is that the future is decentralized. There's a lot of work on the roadmaps of all the companies participating in the sector that are still focused on solving payments. I think stablecoins have been a big development there. The regulatory space is, sort of responding in a really meaningful and rapid way. A lot of leadership out of the Americas on that is a big deal. And I think a lot of the unfulfilled promise around digital identity, supply chain transparency, energy systems, property rights, and much more are all to come. But they needed all this, you know, digital asset kind of infrastructure that we've talked about that's been built over the previous decade. And now it's kind of like an execution decade. And so lots of excitement. And I know you've got open roles, and we do too at blockchain.com. So it's a great time to get in the industry. And it's not too late. It is early. And this stuff is all going to get hypercharged by AI. So we're looking for more allies.
Exactly right. Thank you very much, Nick. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Cheers.